Hello, everyone. This is the sixth installment of my series that I'm calling Quarantine Conversations in the Age of COVID-19. And today I'm speaking with independent musician as well as small business person. You may know Squirt from his work with his own band, Public Serpents, as well as with Choking Victim. He is based in the New York City, New Jersey area. Squirt, if you could introduce yourself and tell everyone who doesn't know you a little bit about who you are and what it is that you do.
My name is Squirt, last name Gunn, play drums in a band called Choking Victim for a little while, still playing, but I front my own band, singing for Public Serpents, play a lot of ska, punk, loud, angsty shit to make you angry. I got my own little cleaning company over here. It's what I do now on the off hours from my rock and roll endeavors. But, you know, clearly now no one has a rock and roll endeavor. So we're doing stuff like trying to further this label that I have called Tent City Records. Started that in 96. That's something we can actually do in the lockdown age. Just trying to get music out there, doing a lot of folk punk, ska punk, hardcore type stuff now. That's a good intro, I think. Is that suffice?
I think so. Because your cleaning business requires you to be out and about and dealing with different types of people, different customers that you have, how has that been affected right now, today? And really, today is meaningless because I don't even know what day it is. I just know it's a day where I got up.
The day you got up. Yeah. Well, luckily, in New Jersey, building maintenance and janitorial services have been, deemed essential businesses. So that's a lucky shot we got. The downside of it is we do work with a lot of residential homes. So because that's the case, people are kind of scared to have us come in. So, where we were doing, I'd say 8 to 10 jobs a day, 6 days a week, we're down to 3 to 5 jobs a day, 3 days a week. That's a decent enough week. Today was actually the first day that we had two teams in about 4 to 5 weeks, I think. So, hopefully, we're going to restore a little consumer confidence. We've been, taking a lot of care to do our work right. We changed our products to be, stuff with Corona kill codes on it, meaning things that actually kill the coronavirus, like alcohol, Lysol products, and the crews are wearing masks, gloves as usual, and Tyvek suits to, kind of limit the, I don't know what the word would be, limit the exposure, I guess, to a customer, but still, that isn't really enough because honestly, if I had a cleaning company, I would probably not want them in my house. It's the last refuge. If you are 100% on the, CDC kind of like guidance on this virus. So it sucks. I've been subsidizing a lot of my work with power washing jobs because I don't have to go in your house to do that. And luckily it happened at this time, because that's something that needs to be done around this time of year over here. Cause it's not like sunny California where you are, where everything is everything all year round.
When the order came from the governor to stay inside, I just want you to know it was rainy and cold for almost 2 weeks.
And all right, so that's like of course I'm staying inside, dummy.
Yeah, it really sucked. It wouldn't have been so bad if it was at least sunny out, but part of the allure is that it is decent weather most of the time, and the one time, of course, where we were low on rain, then it decided to rain nonstop for 2 weeks during the initial part of the lockdown, so now I guess we caught up with our rain levels.
Lowered your pollution levels, apparently. That's what they keep saying. So it's actually kind of funny, because it seems like New York City and L.A., two like, wildest places or whatever in the country are like the two places that everyone's actually taking this very seriously. From what I know, the people that I know in LA and New York, the streets are dead. No one's going out. Everyone's kind of adhering to the order, whereas like a place like New Jersey's always been kind of notorious for kind of doing what they want. Like you saw The Sopranos, right? They just kind of do whatever the hell they want to do, like government contracts or, you know, all kinds of crazy, you know, like crooked and all that. And you wouldn't even really know that there's a lockdown here by the way people are just walking around and driving around. And the only thing that really says it to you are there's a lot of stuff's closed. So, you know, it's kind of weird. It is definitely weird because, you know, you have this environment where you can't make money really. People are freaking out a little bit, but then you have, you know, these other people who are just like, you know, picking their asses, rubbing their noses, you know, no gloves. And you're like, what the hell is going on? I got a big mask on. I had a mask on 3 weeks before this thing came on, and people were looking at me like I was nuts, telling me, oh, masks don't do anything. And I'm like, all right, cool. And now all these people are wearing masks. So I, you know, it's mixed signals. And theoretically, I kind of wish I was in a place where people took it a little more seriously, even though I have my own political opinions about the whole thing. I definitely don't feel like getting people sick, and I don't want to get sick myself, you know. So I don't know. There's a lot to unpackage with this whole COVID thing.
Oh, absolutely. And I've tried to run it through my head several different ways. And the most obvious is that it is essentially a virus or a flu that people are getting sick from and dying from, and however it came into existence, it exists. But then there are other times when I'm thinking about it a little bit more, and maybe I've watched too many X-Files episodes or what have you to think there's a little bit more to it. But then again, you think about, well, the government, they're not that smart. How could they be this smart, whoever it is? So
when you say the government's not smart, you're looking at the puppet master on top, who is just a friggin' puppet himself. You know, there are some pretty nefarious folks out there. So I don't necessarily think the tinfoil hat is warranted, but I do think that, you know, if you're talking about population control, you know what I mean? Like that just, the reality is, you know, Social Security is on its way out every year. They keep talking about this. Just a drop in the bucket to kill off a few old people, right? You know, if you're a socio-political type of, you know, nationalist, you know, you would admire a country like, you know, North Korea that has like all strong, well, at least as far as they portray strong military people, even though those people are kind of dying of starvation or whatever over there, they portray the country as this very strong military might, you know what I mean? Discipline. Yada, yada. We have a bunch of, no offense to anybody who is overweight, I'm not size shaming, but, you know, we have a lot of overweight people in our population, people that aren't that healthy, and they just kind of hang out and don't really take care of themselves, don't really, you know, I don't know. They're not physical specimens, I guess I'll say, to be fair. And that's, but that's burdensome to an economy and burdensome to, you know, like the system, as if you were one of those people, you know what I mean? This is like something that you, if you were like, hey, I want my country to be mighty again, make America great again, you would have to look at this stuff. So that's why I'm saying that the nefarious folks, you know, what would it hurt to get a bunch of unhealthy people sick and die off? You know what I mean? Like, I don't really think that they really care that much. I mean, I honestly feel like that's why the mixed signals keep coming out there. But, you know, I don't know if this is a political program. I don't know if I should say much more. I don't want to get, you know, my house blown up. So, yeah.
Of course. And it's really just to discuss what you feel, you know, everyone has a different opinion about everything and everyone has a different thought on it. So certainly, as comfortable as you feel, you can discuss. The other is that I do listen to a lot of Coast to Coast radio. I don't know if you're familiar with that. It comes on here pretty late, 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock at night. Well, it's not really late, but it runs all night long. Okay. And it's the old Art Bell show.
I don't know that one.
Oh, okay. It's kind of similar to like X-Files, but on the radio. They talk about all different types of things and they have all different types of opinions. So what you hear on the news during the day can differ greatly what you would hear on their program at night. I believe that I have a lot of different opinions or theories flying around all day long, which I think is a good thing in a lot of ways, because just listening to one source, and I think a lot of people do only listen to one source, is not a healthy way to handle this whatsoever.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I actually, it was funny, I made a Facebook post the other day. I had actually never heard of it. This something called Next News, okay? And they had some can't remember his name. It was like some Dr. Rabin Buttar or something like that. I just asked a general question, like, has anybody ever heard of this guy? Because the shit he's saying is actually kind of interesting. I didn't really like his demeanor. He seemed very unprofessional. So I was doubtful in, you know, how professional the guy was. But because of that, you know, I decided that, you know, at least I'd give it a whirl and try to, you know, hear exactly what, you know, another news source is saying. Turns out that it's a right-wing, you know, conspiracy. Well, maybe not, at least characterized as a right-wing conspiracy type of, you know, news agency. Very Trump-heavy, very disbeliever-heavy, you know. But you know, I asked a question, you know, a general question. And, you know, I'm open to all types of people, you know what I mean? Like, I'm very political in the sense that I don't trust the government. I don't like cops. I hate fucking Trump. I hate the guy, you know. But I will open my heart to other information, because I'm not committed to CNN. I'm not committed to NPR. I'm not committed to Al Jazeera. I'm not committed to Fox. I'm committed to information, you know, medical information, political information. And I'm pretty good, at least in my opinion, at taking information, extracting what makes sense, and using it. Just like I said, people were looking at me funny for wearing these masks. I know that these countries, you know, these Asian countries where there's been a lot of pandemics in the past and germ virus outbreaks, whatever, people have been wearing this for years. It took a bunch of, I hate saying the word idiot, but it took a bunch of idiots to tell more idiots to wear masks to them, for them to start wearing masks. You know, it just, some things are common sense, some things aren't. And if you just rely on one news source, like you're saying, you know, you're going to get screwed, because, you know, it's just like, it's, to me, it's like the Bernie people. You know, I thought Bernie was a great candidate. I didn't really think he had many chances. I love his policies. I hate Biden. Biden's a douchebag. But, you know what I mean? If it's a choice between Biden and Trump, I'm going with Biden. Sorry. Because I know Biden will kind of hire a cabinet. Even though he's a president, even though he's a piece of shit politician, and they do all kinds of terrible shit, they drop bombs, all that stuff, I know he'll hire a cabinet that will actually do their work. He won't have an ego problem anytime somebody, you know, tells him he's wrong about something and then fire them. Whereas, you know, Trump is just dangerous for this. You know what I mean? Like, they'll allocate money to certain things, whereas Trump will just cut it all off. I found it really insulting to me that Bernie supporters who pretend or are for all his great policies, I had a hard time hearing people say, well, I'm not going to vote at all. You know, like, okay, so you are heartfelt about these policies. You're heartfelt about all the good that he's trying to do. But because you didn't get your way like a little baby, you're just going to let the guy who's the antithesis to everything your candidate was about win? It just doesn't make any sense. And then the quick answer to that is, oh, well, they're no better. He's a rapist too. And I'm just like, okay, I understand that. You know what I mean? I understand what he's been accused of. You know, and I'm not making excuses for that, because that's terrible. That's wrong. 100%. But, you know, past all these arguments, past the things you're talking about, there is still, you know, the fact that Trump is, you know, a narcissist. He's mentally unstable right now. His choice for people to work under him are terrible. Everything he does is based on his ego. You have to, you have to kiss his ass in order to actually get him to listen to you and like you. But you kiss his ass, somebody else kisses his ass right after, he changes his mind. It's just, it's dangerous. You know, I don't know. I just feel like we've already seen what this asshole can do. Let's try somebody else. You know what I'm saying? He's not a wartime president. This is not a war. The only reason it's a war is because he fucked up in the beginning and let it get out of control. This guy lights fires, puts them out, and pretends like he's a hero. So anyway, I think I'm elaborating a lot.
I think it's the most important thing. I think more importantly, who the candidate is who the candidate will appoint, whether it's the Supreme Court or in his cabinet. That matters almost as much, if not more, than who the president is, because people weren't thinking when they didn't vote for the Democratic candidate and Trump got elected, because he's the one, all this, you have to look at the Supreme Court, there are a lot of old people there.
Yeah.
And they're going to either retire or die in that position. So they're going to have the power to appoint. And because people didn't really think it through, now we're in a situation that we're in, and that is just...
That's not right. People did think it through. The people that thought it through were the Republicans, the same people that said, hey, we're going to vote against everything Obama does. So those are the people who thought about it. The general populace didn't think about that. So that's a shame.
Right. That's what I mean. The voters didn't really think about it too much.
And some of those voters, though, listen, I don't trust the voter. You know, they thought Trump was going to be different and he'll shake up the system. And yeah, he shook up the system. But like, I don't want a plumber doing brain surgery. You know what I mean? Like, you got to, they are politicians. I get it. They suck. They're assholes. They do all kinds of terrible stuff. But I don't know. Would you want the one that knows what he's doing, has done it for years, you know, knows how to negotiate? Or do you want tantrum having bankruptcy prone, you know, liar, insanity guy, you know, running your stuff? So, those are choices we really need to think about. And, you know, at the end of the day, like, who do you, you know, honestly, I'd rather just go to the woods and not deal with any of this stuff. It's not really a possibility right now. So yeah, we got to figure out this the right way. And like you said, Supreme Court is a huge part of it. You know, the cabinet members are a huge part of it, because in reality, all the president does is sort of, he's a figurehead. He sort of like has a vision. He puts these people in these places and hopefully the vision comes together if he's good at what he does. Trump just does stuff. He's like a fucking dog. You know what I mean? He pees on stuff. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. There's nothing to him, you know, and people think that's great. Okay, cool. Those same people think that's great, but I wouldn't have them rake my lawn. And I'm actually not even angry at them, you know, same way I'm not angry at people that were scammed by Bernie Madoff. You know, he projected this great persona. They thought they were going to make a lot of money with him. His supporters thought the same thing too. Some of them lack mental, I guess, stamina to keep up with the games that he's playing. You know, we got to do something about this. We got to stop this guy in his tracks.
Yeah, absolutely. What is the, up until this time, what was the biggest challenge you faced with your band Public Serpents and your record label? And you can't really play shows, but what were the challenges before all this happened?
Interesting question. Well, I am a parolee. I am actually, I was incarcerated and was released, what am I going to say, September, October 2018. So I'm serving out a parole sentence. I guess that's part, I'm serving out the rest of my sentence on parole. You know, like not being able to tour was a hurdle. As far as, you know, the label is concerned, you know, because about 6-7 of my years of my life have been legal turmoil, not being able to focus on the thing that I love because of lack of funding, lack of ability to, you know, you can't run a label out of prison. So that was done deal. All that stuff, that was probably the hardest thing that was in my way. You know what I mean? Now that I'm out, I can actually record. We can play local shows. Every now and then I'll get permission to go, you know, whatever, play some other shows. And, you know, that's cool. But, you know, the fact that I actually have to ask permission from, you know, some fucking cop with a badge and a gun that plays with piss all day for a living because he has to take your analysis. That's not a word, your analysis is, by the way. I made that up. But he has to do your analysis all day. It's just not a very easy kind of situation for being in a band. It's not very helpful to get deals and stuff either. So, yeah, I would say that's, being that the case, running a full-time business, you know, as well as owning a home. My kids are all grown up now, you know, but owning this home, you know, there's a lot of adult kind of responsibilities. So I guess also the other thing probably would be the balance between being a little kid in my mind, trying to play all these shows and do all that, and then be that adult. You know, that's also another hindrance, I think, on my, you know, my character, I guess. Does that make sense? Hope that makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. What is the atmosphere like now in the community, in the punk community where you are? You're in New Jersey.
Yeah.
So what is the, you probably don't see a lot of people at this point.
Oh, I don't see nobody. You know, it's funny, the one guy in my band, he doesn't even come. We tried to do a live stream. His girlfriend won't let him leave the house. And I'm just like, okay, whatever, dude. You know, it's like, this is the thing, is like, I live in the suburbs, dude. I lived in New York City for a long time. I was on the street for a long time, you know, been around, whatever. When I decided to have kids, you know, we moved out of the city, and then it was like, okay, I'm going to buy this fucking house. And we bought a house. So now I'm even further out of the mix. You know, I kind of created, you know, my label, my band, my studio. It's all contained into my house. So my dealings with people is when I go out to go play shows and when we practice and when we record. Since none of that's happening right now, you know, I can still, you know, because the first record we did, I recorded everything, you know, I played everything, all that stuff. I could be doing that now. I think there's like this sort of, what's the word, limbo kind of, I hate when people say you're in a funk. I hate that. But that's kind of what's happening now. It's like I'm just sort of trying to, you know, play catch up with myself and feel a little bit better because I'm a bit of a conspiracy theorist. You know what I mean? Like I'm like ready to go. I have 80 acres of land ready for me if I need to leave. You know what I mean? I'm ready to go out and live off the grid, you know, but I'm trying to maintain here in New Jersey under the circumstances that everybody else is living under, you know, kind of living this whole life, you know, and not want to run to this other thing that feels 10 times better to me. So it's hard to, and I'm trying to come back to what the original question was, but it's hard to kind of like juggle all those thoughts and even want to try to do something with other people. You know, clearly, you know, like I'd love to be playing shows. That's like my creative outlet. I love it. It makes me come alive. Like I exercise the demons inside of me when I do that. You know, it's like, it's kind of like, I don't know, therapy, I guess, you know, but you know, that can't be done, you know, and you know, you can't really even go out anywhere other than to freaking supermarkets and Lowe's. Like I told you, I just came back from Lowe's. I'm building a chicken coop in my yard. That's how much of a conspiracy theorist I am. My garden is huge to me. I just got chickens because I'm hearing this food shortage is coming. You know, this is the kind of things that I'm thinking about. So I'll honestly say the hell with the punk scene right now. I'm more concerned with my garden and my chickens, you know, and that's nothing against the punks. It's just, I think everyone kind of, and actually it kind of intertwines because, you know, there's this whole group of punks that, you know, not to talk shit, but these guys that go to punk rock bowling, you know what I mean? They're like 50, 60 years old, wearing all the bowling gear. They like all those big popular Epitaph bands, whatever, you know, they're just going there to drink beer and have a good old ha-ha time. I think they lost sight of the actual politics in it. You know, to me, being self-sufficient, being autonomous, being your own island unto yourself is super important. That's why I have my own studio. That's why I have my own label. That's why I have a huge garden. That's why I have fucking chickens right now. Because, you know, I'm just not one of those kind of like people that's content with like, you know, the MyPillow guy speaking out in favor of, you know, what industry should do and, you know, the fact that a mask should be worn now, like I think for myself. And, you know, it's kind of like, it's almost like, what's the word? Anyway, I got an axe to grind with the punk scene to some degree, because there's a lot of people out there that just don't think for themselves. It, you know, you live in LA and you know that, and you lived in Massachusetts. So you know the difference between the coasts. Punk, to me, was a choice I made, you know, not really to, you know, have a mohawk and, you know, jump around and like just look like everybody else. But a lot of the bands in LA, it's like after 81, everyone's just kind of doing it. It was like 5,000 kids at a show. And believe me, that's awesome. I love playing shows in LA. I appreciate it. I just don't know if the mindset is the same as somebody from a rural town or somebody like for me, I started getting into punk in like 87, 86. And by that time, it was like all skinheads and, you know, like sneaker boys. That's what they called them. So there's like 10 of us. We're the only punks. Like, it felt like being a punk probably in 79, 78, 77. You know, and I don't know. I don't appreciate, you know, the whole fashion aspect of it. So I don't care what punk is going on. I don't care what's going on right now. There are some cool actual live streams happening, though. So that's something I think that a lot of people who are interested in punk should be checking out. I know on my Facebook group, Wiki Punk, you know, there's this guy who does this thing called Punk Rock Night. Well, they used to do it. I think they may still do it in Indianapolis. And he's been live streaming all the old shows. that they put on. And then there's another live stream that I've been checking out called Coping with Dystopia. A lot of folk punk stuff, but they're starting to get other punk in there. And I'm sure there's a million things I haven't even seen and heard. So I guess my advice to those punks would be to really, you know, start supporting that, because if we're stuck indoors for another year, you know, there's going to be a lot of people who just crave making music and they really could use your support right now. So I guess that's probably the most, positive and constructive thing I could say about punk rock right now.
Would you say that playing live shows is what you miss most about life pre-lockdown or pre-quarantine?
Yeah, I do. I miss it, like, actually immensely. We had so many shows set up, ready to go. But there is also, somebody brought this word up to me, Schadenfreude. You know what the word Schadenfreude?
Yeah. When, yes.
When someone, you know, is so, like, messed up and something bad happens to them and you're happy about it. I've been on parole for a minute, and now y'all motherfuckers are on parole. You got to hang out in your house. You got to watch what you do. You can't do what you want. Not to say that I want people to be oppressed, but I think a lot of people don't understand the justice system, especially for black and brown people. It's a lot different. You know, my skin's white. You know, I'm Irish. I'm Lebanese. I'm Portuguese. I'm American Indian. So I'm only a quarter white, theoretically, I guess, by that measure. But, you know, we with our white skin, we walk around and think everything is everything. And so many people, black and brown, you know, brothers out there and sisters are like living a whole other world, a whole other world. Like the shit that you're mad about now, not getting a haircut, getting your nails done, you know, like imagine just trying to walk through a neighborhood to a train station and getting harassed. You know what I mean? Like, I think that this whole thing happening is a really great wake up call for society because, you know, I got kids. Their biggest inconvenience was their Wi-Fi data going over, or, you know, a black spot in the service, or, you know, they get angry at like the slightest inconvenience because for some reason Americans think that they should be not inconvenienced. We're all getting inconvenienced now, so I'm kind of happy, you know, and I'm kind of happy. So even though I don't get to play these shows that I love dearly, two things are coming out of this. The Schadenfreude thing, where I'm happy to see other people's downfall, maybe teach them something. And then with the music, you know, it's a different scene in LA. Like a lot of people go to shows out there, even local shows. The backyard shows are ripping them all out of the time. But on the East Coast, a lot of people don't support small bands. And I have this really huge feeling that once this is over, people are going to be so cooped up for so long, they might actually start appreciating their local bands again, at least for, you know, a 6 month, 10 month, 12 month period. I really hope that happens. And in which case, I miss it, but I think it's going to be 20 times better once we get back to it, you know? And, you know, I don't know. I just, art is something you can't really negotiate with. It just happens. Man, you know, a lot of people are just sleeping on some great things going on there. A lot of people just don't know about great bands. And I hope they go out of their way to find them, you know, and get out there.
I certainly hope so. Because if I throw a show and five people show up, I'm going to be pissed. If people don't come to the show, I'm going to be like, where the fuck are you? It's over, you know?
Well, maybe there's some live streams still going on or something that they're, you know, still on the fumes of, who knows?
I know for myself, I had so many shows, like really good shows on the calendar that I've just had to cancel, and I will cancel. I think I'm into June now. It looks like I'm going to probably have to cancel most of June. And something told me not to book beyond what I had booked already because I don't know what was in my head. But usually I'll book out 6 months, and I didn't book out maybe 2 months. Maybe I just better play it safe because maybe someone will be through on tour. Maybe there'll be a band that wants to play. And then sure enough, I haven't had to cancel that many, but I have had really good ones that I've had to cancel that really sucked.
Yeah, well, you know, what is this business about the mayor of L.A. proper saying no shows until next year?
Well, I don't think that he goes to a lot of shows personally. Maybe when Nickelback comes into town, he may go to a show.
Okay. That's the kind of shows you think he's talking about.
I think he's talking about everything, but I don't think he goes to anything. He's just a square, you know?
Yeah.
And look at him on the TV, and I'm trying to figure out who his acting coach is because they're really good or bad. But I think they're really accomplished of an acting coach. Yeah, there's been talk about no live events in L.A. proper, in possibly L.A. County. And I think if it gets to that point where people can't perform here, on the, even on smaller shows, I think then it's going to be a bigger issue for there to be a decision to possibly change that. Yeah. Because Live Nation here, you have Golden Voice, and I can't imagine that they would be not trying to do whatever it would take to be able to have a show.
Well, the music scene is huge where you are, and that's kind of and this kind of goes to some of my political thinking. It's like, you know, this is a great opportunity to try to hurt social events, but gatherings and interactions, you know, it's like everything is going on online. So everything you talk about, everything you think can be monitored so much easier than, you know, low key gatherings where people are just talking, you know, on the low, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, I feel, you know, maybe I'm an X-Files guy. I don't know. Maybe my tinfoil hat's too tight. To me, this is a perfect opportunity to find out who's who. So everyone is, you know, been talking their shit in person. Now they're typing their shit. And, you know, this is like not only a redistribution of wealth, but also one of the greatest intel collection periods in history. You know what I mean? Because now you can see who's a radical. You know what I mean? Now you can see who's thinking radical. And the reality is they wanted to put all of our, you know, information on one ID a while back. This is getting us closer to that again, you know, medical, financial, criminal, all in one ID. You know, if you find out who's who, you know how to fuck with them. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. I'm freaking out a little bit, but, you know, and they did just kind of vote that Surveillance Act back in while no one was paying attention. I forgot the name of it, but it had just lapsed, you know, because it was from 9/11 times, but they voted to extend it. So, you know, these are all stories that, you know, people don't know about, and things are happening, and we're just kind of at the mercy of these people we call politicians. So, ramble.
It's quite possible that the larger venues, if they cut the capacity here, they won't be able to operate because it'll be too expensive.
Yeah.
You know, they're not going to be able to have the staffing. They can't. It's going to be a give and take. I can't imagine. I'm glad I have nothing to do with a large venue. You know, mine is very small that I work with. Yeah. It would be just a nightmare. Like, I can't imagine what it would be like, but maybe they would put X's on the floor and you could stand here and you could stand over there. And but you can't, you know, do a circle pit. And if you do, you have to, like, hopscotch.
Yeah, or Twister. Hazmat suit Twister. Yeah, no, there's a venue here called The Saint. I don't know if you ever heard of The Saint. They're in Asbury Park. They're closing down. They've been living hand to mouth for years and been there for like 25 years. Can't handle this. There's a lot of financial woes going on, you know, so I don't know. Definitely those large venues, like, how's the Observatory doing? They're just sucking it up right now, just waiting. That's what's going on. It's a huge venue.
I think so. They're in Santa Ana, and I think that they're a partnership with someone else, I believe. I think there's more than just one sole person that runs it. So I think they may be okay, but certainly taking a month off, just, I can't even wrap my head around it. When I went out, when I woke up the next day, you know, thinking that the night before, like, what's going to happen tomorrow? The only thing I could equate it to the following day or the following week after we were told that most things were going to close down. It just reminded me of that time after 9/11 when everything across the country, I was also here in LA, there were no planes in the sky. yeah. at that time. And now there's very few. There was really no one on the road. People didn't know what to do. People were freaking out. And so this is very similar to that in a lot of ways. And some people may not even remember that because for some, they were very young. Sadly, I was not young at all. I
old people.
But this is the only thing I can equate it to in a way.
Yep. Well, it is similar, but I don't even think it's similar because that didn't last longer than a few days, a week or 3 weeks or whatever, you know, whatever the different municipalities were doing. This is theoretically something here to stay. You know, we're lucky that if this is a real thing, and I hate to say it's not real, or it is, because so many of my friends would argue with me that I say it's not real. So many friends would argue that I say it's real. You know what I mean? Like, everyone has an opinion. But if it's to the veracity or intensity, rather, that they're saying it is, you know, we are lucky that it was this one, because it could have been something far worse. You know, we could have been knocked the fuck out. You know what I mean? Like, the truth is, yeah, there's a lot more people dying than the flu, but if this was something really virulent, you know, we would be done. And I don't think that this is the first one or the last one we're going to see. You know, all these Asian countries just deal with this all the time. Now that this is here, you know, I don't know. People are dirty, man. You could wash your hands. You know, I went to the post office today and the lady's behind like a shower curtain. It's like a little weird post office. Gloves on. She's got no mask on. She's touching all these things I'm bringing in. So, I mean, she's touching everything everyone else is bringing in. And I instantly see her picking her nose, wiping her face. It's just like, damn, you just don't get it. You don't see what's going on. Like, I don't know. Me, I got my fuck Trump mask on. I got my gloves on. I'm wrapped up, you know, like, I'm not rolling the dice like that. I got other things I got to deal with rather than up on a respirator or a ventilator for 3-4 weeks and then maybe dying. I don't know. I'm good with all that death stuff, you know?
Yeah. Before this happened, you know, when I lived in New York, I was very aware of the germs that existed on the subway, on the buses, and it always kind of grossed me out, but not to the point where I would have taken it to what I would have considered at the time an extreme, like wearing gloves on the subway.
I never did that either.
I mean, I knew a kid from Massapequa whose friend came into the city once during college, and he wore gloves. He goes, don't say anything to him. People think he's weird because he does it, right? This is years and years ago. And now he completely made sense. Like, he's really...
Smartest dude out.
Yeah. And so now... since then, I've been very aware, and I would always wash my hands. I was always, you know, aware of, you know, holding the bathroom door open, the public restroom door open with my foot as I washed my hands, so I wouldn't have to touch it as I walked out, because it seemed counterintuitive to touch the door afterwards. But I still saw people, you know, and I'm sure you see it all the time when you're out. People just don't even, they don't hit the sink. They go to the bathroom and they walk out, and you're just like, okay.
Yeah, you know? So there's some, you know, less than intelligent folks out there. Me, I got my own microphone. I never use a microphone at a venue, because that's just a filth bomb right there. You're waiting to get sick using that, you know, spitting up all on it. You know what I mean? You might get the one G.G. Allen used, you know. Actually, there's a venue over here that if they don't like you, they give you the microphone that he shoved up his butt there. I don't know if that's a rumor, but. You know, but you know, there's also, I don't know, you ever watch The Sopranos? Because I started thinking about this one episode where Paulie Gaultieri is just talking about how I don't touch my shoelaces. And he's like, what do you mean you don't touch your shoelaces? Because, you know, when you walk through the bathroom and your shoes are untied and they're walking and they're falling off through the piss on the floor. Oh, that's so disgusting. I don't like to do it. I'm just like, wow, these people actually had some sense, you know, because that's what it's basically like now. If you're just touching, well, it's not like that, but if you're touching packages that some random people come and bring to your thing, and then you touch your face immediately after, you know, like, I don't know. I used to be the crusty ass homeless dude. I didn't take showers for months. So, you know, it's funny how that was my life, and now I have a cleaning company. But at least being cognizant of viruses, the way they're transmitted, and the fact that we're in a supposed pandemic now, maybe, I don't know, maybe she should be wearing gloves and not touching her face. Call me crazy. I don't know.
Yeah, so exactly. Getting back to a question that I've had and I never seem to ask or remember to ask, but were you are you a self-taught musician? And if so, what was the, I guess, the reasoning or the impetus for you to start with music or to try it just to see what would happen? And then, because you do play a lot of instruments, how did that progress?
Okay. So when I was a kid, I was in fourth grade in Massachusetts. In third grade, you were allowed to take violin or trombone. You weren't allowed to take any other instruments. And I wanted to try guitar as a kid, but I wasn't able to. So they only had trombone classes. And I was like, oh, okay, I'll try this. But like 3 months into it, I was like, yo, this thing is huge. I look like an asshole walking to school with it. I gave up. I stopped playing it. Fast forward to when I was around 12 or 13, my friend's neighbor was getting rid of a drum set. It wasn't a full kit. And, you know, I was like, wow, I kind of want to play drums. That would be so cool. But I had no idea how to play them. But me and my friends, we always joked about starting a band called, because you remember back in the day, if you had a band with the name Youth at the end of it, that was like everybody had a band with the Youth. So we were Trojan Youth, you know, the condoms. We thought that was fun. We were young as hell. But so I got this drum set and I left it at my friend Eric's house. I didn't have a chance to play it. I was like an aspiring musician. I owned part of a drum kit, but I never actually used it. So fast forward to when I actually ran away from home, and this is going to be in my book, actually. This is one of the stories. There was this place called the Gore House. It was, I don't know if you know any of these bands, Big Meat, Hammer, Rodeo Jesus, and the Gore Hounds. That's, you know, they had a couple other bands, Skull 69, G.G. Allen was hanging out there, Lisa Suckdog, all these people that I met at a very young age. Well, my buddy Bob Farrington and his girlfriend Dominique were upstairs in the attic where all the bands would practice. And they were just kind of like jamming one day. And I, you know, I'm a little kid, you know what I mean? And I'm like enthralled by the fact that people are playing instruments and whatever. So I kind of go up there and I'm like watching them play. And I'm like, yo, this is cool. But the only place to sit was at the drum kit. So like I'm there for like good 20, 30 minutes. And like I start like tapping it, like, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, about an hour later, like I started like really hitting it, really, really, really hitting it. And, you know, I didn't use my foot, but they were like, dude, you should play drums, you know, like not for them, but in general, because they thought, you know, that I actually had some potential. So that gave me a little faith. When I got back, you know, from all that, I ended up going through a couple group homes back in the, you know, DYS, Department of Youth Services. I don't know if that rings a bell out there, Kitty Jail. When I got back out, my buddy's band, the Foul Mouth Dells, was looking for a drummer. So I started playing with them. That was my first real actual thing that I did with music. Then, you know, the guitar and the bass and all that stuff that kind of came. My buddy had a guitar. I didn't know how to play it, but I would like, kind of pluck at it. And I'm not even lying. One night I had this dream about like patterns on the guitar. And I woke up the next day and I was so interested with playing this thing, these patterns. It all just kind of made sense to me. And that's kind of where all that sort of came from, like just kind of like this sort of, what's the word, an instinct, this guttural want to do it. But the way I actually really kind of got, you know, I don't like to say how good I am or whatever, because it's just weird when people tell you how good they are at something. But you must know the band RKL, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Kids in LSD. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
After they weren't a thing, Bomber was in another band called Bombardier up in San Francisco. So fast forward, I was like maybe like 17 or whatever. We were like all staying in Turk Street Studios where Bombardier practiced. And, you know, it was like a lot of crusty kids. I was living under the stairs. A couple of us were living above the studios, like, because we knew the guy that was the innkeeper or whatever, the maintenance guy. He'd like let like 10 of us stay there at a time. We're all hanging out. He's like, anybody want to come and drink? Blah, blah, blah. Like, hang out. We all went in there. We're all smoking, drinking, whatever. And then he goes, yo, anybody play drums, music at all? And I'm like, I play drums. And I got on the drums. And I started doing my little tic-tac-toe, like, he looked at me, pushed me off the kit, and said, man, you got to dance with these things. And then he got on that shit and was like, just going nuts. And from that point on, I kind of knew I had to get better. And, you know, that's kind of like that dude was like a huge influence to me in the drumming world because, you know, just basically insulting me, telling me I didn't know what the hell I was doing. Don't even bother if you're not going to, you know, do your thing and dance with the drums. That was huge, you know, because, you know, and ever since then, everything I do to the guitar, to the bass, the drums, the singing, you know, everything, if you don't feel what you're doing, you have no right playing music. That's just the reality. So I guess that's the evolution sort of, you know, kind of learning. And then, you know, I got a studio. So, you know, clearly you have to, like, you know, record stuff, you know, you can't just let people do it for you. So I kind of got better over the years doing that stuff. But the funny thing with Public Serpents was, you know, I had played drums and sang backups for Choking Victim, you know, and I had my parts or whatever, but I never considered being a full on vocalist. Well, I had recorded all these songs. And I was like, damn, I need a band. Who's going to sing? And then I'm like, but all these songs are like, I like a lot of different kinds of music. Like, but the songs that I was writing were ska, punk, but also dancehall reggae. And, you know, I didn't know any punk singers, let alone anybody that could chat, you know, dancehall style. So that was kind of like, okay, well, I guess I'm going to sing. Fuck it. And that's kind of where the singing thing came from. So it was all self-taught. You know, I didn't really get into mimicking any musicians. I just kind of did everything for myself, you know, the style that I thought suited. And I really sucked at singing at first. So not that I'm much better now, but yeah, you know, I was terrible. I was fucking horrible, like hurting my voice all the time. But, you know, I kind of picked up a couple of techniques and, you know, now I can last. I got a little distance in me. So, yeah, is that interesting enough, that story?
I think it's a good story. I spoke to Bert from Upper Downer the other day, and you have a release, Public Serpents and Upper Downer, that came out this year.
Yep.
And then you have a release with Escape from the Zoo that's out this year as well. Why don't you talk a little bit about those two releases and how they came together?
Oh, shit. Okay, cool. So we had approached Escape from the Zoo about doing a split. Well, I had approached, like, about doing a split with them, and it was like an idea that had come to light. We're like, yeah, let's do this. So we started getting the, you know, the shit ready to do that. Along the way, my guitarist Kyle White had been talking to Chris, I think, and possibly Bert, but I think mainly Chris, because Chris has been my point man in the mix since, about doing it. So we figured that the Escape from the Zoo one was going to come first, and then the Upper Downer one would come second. Well, it didn't happen that way. It took a lot longer to get the other one done. But because partially too, because that was done on a digital format, you know, which I hope to get out onto a 7-inch at some point. Money's a little tight right now, so we'll see what happens. But yeah, that was actually pretty awesome, because the truth is that Public Servants hasn't recorded a full length or anything really since 2008, 2009, you know, my legal problems keeping me out of, you know, playing, you know, like I literally lost like 5 to 7 years due to legal problems. So I won't say that's the excuse, but it's certainly a reason. But yeah, you know, once we kind of linked up with the Upper Downer project, I was pretty psyched, because, you know, we you know, it's like, I find that these splits are really good opportunities to expose yourself, not like, you know, with a trench coat, but, you know, a nudity, but, you know, expose yourself to another band's audience, you know, and Upper Downer still certainly has a really awesome sound. They're really tight. They have like, you know, refreshing kind of like punk, and they get some ska stuff. So it was good to like get our beaks wet, I guess, back in with music, you know, showing off to people that, you know, they already have in their pocket there. You know, and then anybody else who had heard of us in the past got a chance to hear about them. So that was a really good release. You know, again, I wish it was on vinyl or something. We released it on cassette, you know, not that the cassettes are flying off the shelves, but fast forward now to this release with Escape from the Zoo. I'm super psyched because we got it on 7-inch, you know, and, you know, if anybody knows Escape from the Zoo, that's Jesse from Days and Days, and, you know, his wife, you know, been in a band for a while. They do, they're doing a lot of stuff now. A lot of people are getting, you know, getting exposed to them, knowing who they are. So it was a good opportunity for us to, you know, open up to that crowd because, you know, Days and Days is super folk punk. You know what I mean? Like, they're, like, pretty big in that world, whereas my other band was, you know, pretty big in our world. So, you know, we're kind of, like, combining forces. Not to mention the fact that we got our video, first video we've ever done, out on the same day that we released, which was actually just this past Tuesday, 4/21. Yeah, we needed to wake all the potheads up with something. So, you know, we let that stuff out there for their benefit, you know, because they needed to wake up. They needed some electrolytes and some ska punk to get up. But yeah, super, super psyched about that. Those guys are great too. They're phenomenal musicians. Their songs are super catchy. So yeah, like if anyone wants to, you know, is listening, if anybody cares buying the stuff, tentcityrecords.net, because .com got lost when I was locked up. Somebody cyber squatted my website. Tentcityrecords.net, you can pick up the 7-inch. Don't have that many left, actually. We did like 75 pre-sales, you know, on a 300 run. So super rare. But you should check out our video. It's on YouTube, Punk with a Camera channel. Kind of go back to what I was saying before, is to support local music, because, you know, we were both in pretty decent bands that people know, but, you know, our other bands are not well known. So, you know, hopefully people care enough to check out new bands.
Can you talk about the video for Crust Punk Girl, which is phenomenal, by the way? It was great. I thought it was very funny.
Yeah, that's from the split. Basically, on that vinyl, we each did a cover. They did it more of a direct cover of a Cake song, Frank Sinatra. And we did a reboot of Dead Milkmen's Punk Rock Girl. Kind of just, I wanted to do Punk Rock Girl 2.0 for the modern age, you know, because, I don't know. You know, it's a great song. I love that band. I love, you know, and I'm super psyched that, you know, I really wanted Jack to be in our video. I say Jack like he's my buddy. He's not my buddy. I just know him from an email. But I really wanted him to be in the video, like as a cameo. But, you know, he's a busy guy. I wasn't able to do it. So, you know, we were really thankful that they let us do it. We ended up basically shooting the story of a love story gone wrong, you know, for in the crust punk world. You know, guy meets girl, falls in love, then kind of goes, wait a minute, what the hell's going on here? Why is this happening? Whoa, wait, why'd you do that? Okay, I'm gonna fall back. I'm gonna trust that you're who you are. I can't judge you. And, you know, by the end of the story, he, you know, finds out that his new girlfriend teams up with her old friend, this guy Pirate, and he ends up not being happy at them going through his shit, trying to rob him, and he kills both of them in the squat and buries them under the under the floorboards. So, you know, they never got to the banana swirls. They never got to travel around the world, you know. So that's what happened in the modern day punk rock girl world. But, yeah, filming that video was fun. We were, you know, I used to live at C Squat. So I guess that's probably why I got permission to go there in its modern day capacity and film the video there. But, you know, we had Brandon from Punk with a Camera fly up. Him and Ellie, you know, both did a great job, you know, doing the work with us. You know, I'm not going to say that I directed it because he directed it. It's his, you know, he picked all the shots, all that. Although I helped with that, but I will feel comfortable in saying I produced the video because, it was very dear to me the way that this was to go down, to the point that we, you know, we obviously had, artistic disagreements on how it should be filmed, you know, and, you know, we ended up adding a bunch of animation. Funny shout out to Municipal Waste in there, you know, like, because in the song, that's where they go to Portland and Municipal Waste is playing. So we kind of cop some of the animation from their animated video. Can't remember the name of the song, but the one where, you know, it's them all doing crazy shit. Anybody knows that band will know that video. So we added a little bit of that, you know, little take on me aha feel with the transitioning from the, you know, animation to live kind of stuff. Maybe not really perfectly that way, but yeah, it was, it came together. It really came together. And the story is, I'm looking at it from the outside and I think the story is funny because it's very visual. You can actually see a trajectory through the whole story. Whereas, you know, some of my lyrical content is very abstract, you know, kind of downtrodden. I'm actually kind of happy that I was able to do a funny thing, which is, you know how some actors like, what's his name? Keanu Reeves is just kind of like Keanu Reeves every movie. It's the same dude. You know, like certain actors are just themselves through every song. I mean, through every movie. I was scared that we were going to be just, you know, Squirt, Public Serpents, you know, yet another song. But we were able to sort of, it's like, you know, when Jim Carrey does all his funny stuff, but then what was that movie he did where he was like all serious? Eternal Sunshine. You know what I mean? Like, like you're like, oh, wow, you did a serious movie. That's kind of the same feeling that I sort of got knowing that this was accomplished. So cool stuff, you know? I don't know. You kind of ask a little more of yourself and you deliver. Yeah. I don't know. Did that even answer the question? I don't even know if I answered the question.
Yeah, and it kind of read to me as the crust punk version of Law and Order in a lot of ways, the TV show.
There was a little of that.
No, it was great. And when you first told me about it, almost a year ago, I think, or maybe not that long, but when you first told me about it, I didn't envision anything what I saw, and what I saw was amazing. I mean, the production value is great. I think everything about the video is really, really good. So I would be pleased if this were the first official video that was ever done by a band I was in. You know, it's great.
Yeah, no, I am actually quite proud. We are doing a fully animated video. He's starting on it next week. Same guy that did our animations. It's going to be a little more gothic-y, dark. The song is called Armageddon Stomp. Sort of like, it's, you know, Armageddon. Clearly, it's a biblical term, but it is a song about, you know, a battle between good and evil. But I have this overarching theme through a lot of my songs where locusts are coming to attack. And I sort of kind of equate it with, you know, the powers that be, you know, like, you know, politicians, cops, you know, that's my, you know, that's my way of like putting them into the insect world. And, you know, the common man is the fly, the army of the flies, Lord of the Flies kind of, you know, sort of idea. And this video is going to be about that, you know, battle between the locusts and the flies. So it's going to have a lot of Dante's Inferno sort of imagery, you know what I mean? Like, you know, not direct from it, but like, you know, kind of, you know, Gustave Doré, Dante's Inferno. There's a lot of heavy scenes that, you know, it's not going to be 100% serious, but it's going to be a lot more serious. So I'm pretty psyched to see how this is going to come out. And we are actually planning to do another video for the other song on that split, When Pigs Lie. Up in Paterson, New Jersey, you know, with a couple of my buddies that I was locked up with, you know, sort of shine a light on, you know, police oppression, you know, the new Jim Crow kind of way of being. So a few things, and I really, you know, I learned from my mistakes on this video, despite it coming out really good, there's going to be a lot more I'm going to be putting into stuff going forward. So I think my potential as a film producer might even be there too, not just a music producer, because I kind of see this stuff. I don't know why, it just made sense to me as we're doing it, you know, how this is supposed to look and how to get to where I'm trying to go. So I thank Brandon for using his expertise to help me get where I wanted to go with this thing. So
I really enjoyed watching it, at least
hopefully more people check it out, man. I would love to see, you know, because I'll be honest, dude, I'm pissed. You know my story, trying to get a record deal, whatever, trying to get people to pay attention. Nobody gives a shit. You know what I mean? You know, it's like, if I don't sound like Bad Religion or Rancid or NOFX, who cares, right? That's kind of like the apathy that's out there. But I really hope that as we put these, you know, things into play, that we'll be able to, like, show more people. You know, I honestly restarted my label. A lot of the reason was to get my own stuff out there. And I figured, since I'm doing it, let's get a bunch of other bands out there. And, you know, now, you know, like, this is a perfect opportunity. Get these videos out there. Show people what I can do, what we can do as a band. Maybe they'll take some interest. Because, honestly, people, they need visual stimulation in order to kind of, you know, I guess, sort of acquiesce to an auditory experience, meaning a song. Like, video has kind of changed the whole playing field for music. You know what I'm saying? Like, before, here's a perfect example, Scorpions, right? Kick-ass songs. Them some dudes were ugliest, but nobody thought about it because the music was awesome. You cannot be ugly as hell in a video anymore. You got to have pretty people in these bands. So that's just not saying that's okay, but that just sort of gives you background to how video killed the radio star. You know, wow, yeah. I'm deep. Listen to me. Yeah. And no offense to Scorpions. I love the shit out of Scorpions. Rot you like a hurricane, you know? Not rock you like a hurricane. Rot you like a hurricane. Okay? Tent City Records website. We got like 40 bands on there right now. It's tentcityrecords.net. We actually have a Facebook page. We have an Instagram. Not that I really care so much about that stuff because I don't know, pictures, whatever. But, you know, also Public Serpents. You know, what do you call it? We have our own Facebook page, working on a website. One thing I did want to say, you know, to people anyway that cares, we did, with Choking Victim, we did record a live record before it had actually gotten sentenced. It had been in the, you know, kind of limbo state. We just got the rights to do the record from Fat Records, who they were going to put it out for the Live at a Dive. So we're doing a record dropped in a squat, double live album at some point soon. So keep an eye out for that. And we did record 2 new songs and 2 covers. So when, you know, this virus finally clears and when we can actually play again and when we can get the distro deal for this, those things will actually be coming to light too. So I don't know, maybe we should have put that at the beginning of this thing or for people who care, but I'm not here to promote, you know, things that I do, you know, sometimes. I'm here to promote more that I do all the time, like my life and, you know, my own projects. So yeah, that's something interesting. So, you know, check out all that stuff. And if you want to go on the Punk with a Camera channel on YouTube, you can easily find this Crust Punk Girl video. I, you know, I would love for you guys to all check it out if you're interested. And that's it. Quarantine, quarantine.